Hello. This story is the only remaining record of our existence, and the events which led us into obscurity. Everything else has been scrubbed from time.
Makeshift Stories 117, Series Chapter 4, Gift from Beyond.
A glowing faint blue circle of ionized xenon gas pushed gently against the back of the tiny solar-powered probe. Almost imperceptibly, it was slowing down so it would go into orbit. At the time of its launch, the craft represented the most advanced technology its culture could create, and it was the first time one of their probes had visited more than one target in a single mission. They had named their modest craft Dawn. Dawn's simple, non-sentient onboard systems checked through its stored instructions when it approached within 100,000 kilometers of Ceres, its second, and unknown to its designers, last target. A subroutine was automatically triggered, which turned on the high-resolution camera, and a sequence of photos, timed to capture one complete rotation of the dwarf planet, was taken. Several frames showed a bright anomaly on the surface in one of the larger craters. Recognition software worked on the images, then, finding no match, requested access to the high-gain antenna. Understanding this was not an expected feature on the tiny world, the software set the probe into standby. The faint blue glow of its ion thruster shut off, and Dawn drifted, patiently waiting for instructions. Amos cut the ribbon with a precise swipe of his claw. A polite rustling of fur filled the small Hawk control room in a respectful but muted response. Sweating despite the whine of overworked ventilation fans, Amos wondered how much worse the heat load would have been without the new transistors, which had replaced hundreds of vacuum tubes and over half the electronics. Keeping things warm on a world where the average surface temperature was minus 105 degrees Celsius was normally the challenge. So naturally, they hadn't invested in reinventing air conditioning. Even with the recent advances, it had taken months and several tons of wiring, transformers, and still thousands of vacuum tubes to build a simple radio telescope. It was Ceres first, but still an insult to where the Trifle had been only a few years ago. The thought grated through Amos' mind like sandpaper. The banishment was still an open wound. Every time he was reminded of it, his hearts pounded faster, and his blood pressure rose. The director of technology reclamation waited for the wrestling to subside before she thanked Amos for his great vision, the leadership, the investors, the board, and senior management. Finally, she thanked the individuals who had proposed, designed, and built the telescope. She handed a large red button to Amos, who gave her an obligatory nod. He waited for another wave of dutiful rustling fur to subside before he held the button up and pressed it with a dramatic stab. At the same time, the director made an unnoticed gesture to a technician who turned the great machine on. A large cathode ray tube buzzed to life, casting a gray-green glow over the crowded room. Unseen above, the antenna on the surface began to slew across the sky toward the place where the third planet had risen. Correspondingly, a smooth, wavy line cut across the buzzing CRT screen. The room went silent. Then a large wave jumped to life, accompanied by an ear-piercing squawk. Excited rustling broke out. The director nervously glanced at Amos, hoping the attendees had not noticed.
"That's not the third planet," she whispered in distress.
"An equipment error? You assured me this would go off without a hitch," Amos accused.
The director hopped over to one of the control panels and chattered with its operator. They both pulled out mechanical calculators, ran equations, compared results, then ran them again. The operator looked puzzled. Impatient for the answer, Amos leapt over and puffed himself up, arms on hips.
"So fix it. You only have a few seconds,"
he threatened quietly, looking back at the crowd in the room to make sure he hadn't been overheard.
It's not an equipment error, sir,"
the technician stuttered as she meekly replied.
"It's a second radio source and close by. I think it's moving towards us."
Impossible. Let me see.
Amos grabbed the technician's calculator and ran the numbers for himself. He looked up at the signal on the large cathode ray screen, then back at the calculator.
Move the antenna on to the original target, he ordered.
A half dozen technicians busied themselves with adjustments. Then silence descended on the room as they waited for the antenna to continue along its original path. The green line on the large CRT settled down, then suddenly scrambled again. This time it etched a storm of signals onto the phosphorus surface of the screen.
There they are, exactly as I predicted,
Amos chattered.
The other signal. It's one of theirs. An intruder from the third planet. They must have discovered us. I want ideas for an interception on my desk at the end of shift. How long do we have?
Amos looked at the director of technology reclamation, who simply shrugged. The clatter of calculator keys instantly took over the space. A shy, diminutive technician staffing a large panel of dials looked up.
It's decelerating very slowly, sir. It will take a week to go into an elliptical orbit, then another 2 weeks to flatten into a higher, stable one. Our best chance is at perigee on its first pass. We could grapple it then.
Amos smiled, then announced,
Meet our new head of technology reclamation.
He glared at the current director.
I always reward initiative.
Galen entered the control room, a large pack strapped to his back. He wore a metal band around his head with two lights. The green was currently lit.
I have an idea,
he volunteered. The steam-powered sled had only taken a few days to construct and test. Amos initially thought the idea which Galen, or the repressed Aleutian transplant infecting his brain, had come up with was, if anything, suspect. But the green light on Galen's portable lie detector had never gone out, indicating that he had been telling the truth. There was still the possibility that he could be under the control of the alien. However, if that was so, it was risking itself as well as the host with the harebrained scheme. Galen would be the one launched into space, and he had insisted on that. The cable had been the biggest challenge. At 180 kilometers in length, it had used up all the available carbon fiber on the little planet. There would be no new construction for more than half an orbit. The scheme made sense. Escape velocity on this tiny world was minimal. In fact, it was hard to keep fast-moving objects from lifting off the surface. Still, it was risky, but the potential gain was immense. High risk, high profit. That saying was at the core of their culture, so Amos felt obligated to support the initiative. The radio pack on the back of Amos's environment suit crackled.
15 minutes to perigee. Sir, it's time.
Amos looked down the sights to the point in the sky, just over the horizon where the alien craft would appear. Galen's thickly gloved paws gave the thumbs up. There was a silent puff of gas, then Galen's space-suited figure rocketed down the makeshift rails on a four-wheeled cart, which dropped away as he lifted off, tether unwinding behind him. Amos watched, knowing he could never fully trust Galen. If the harebrained mission failed, it would at least solve one problem. Galen floated in space, watching the alien craft approach. It looked small and frail, but he and his unwanted companion knew that it held the key to their futures. He had one chance. Concentrating on nothing else, he waited, rehearsing the procedure in his mind. When the opportunity finally presented itself, like all overthought plans, the plan itself was the first casualty. The thing had two long, dark wing-like blades and rotated around its central axis, which prevented him from getting close enough to grab the craft. Instead, at the last minute, he lassoed one of the blades with the tether, then held on as he, his unwanted companion, and the alien machine were reeled in.
You have been listening to Ceres, a Makeshift Stories production. Ceres is released once a month between the 1st and the 7th. The story is written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. Opening and closing music by David H.
If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. You can help us out by writing a review on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or any of your favorite podcast services. Series and Makeshift Stories are released under a Creative Commons, non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means that you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.
Thanks for listening to our new series. And please come back between the 15th and the 20th for Makeshift Stories regular podcast, somewhere, sometime.